Good morning, Oregon, and thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. Happy New Year. I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. You'll find the full details of what we do at offbeatoregon.com, which is our anchor page. Please do check that out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of the mule-powered railroad, which was a desperate attempt to stave off ruin by the man who envisioned Newport, Oregon as the dominant seaport of the West Coast, and might have actually gotten it done too if it hadn't been for what seems to have been some interference from the swells that ran Portland. I actually wrote two very similar articles about this, and so we'll have the second of the two coming up probably in a month or so. This particular one focuses on Colonel T. Edgington Hogg and the tiny railroad track that he built over the Cascades, hauled in a boxcar using donkeys, and pulled the boxcar over the top of the pass with the mules, and why he had to do that. This article was first published in May 31st, 2009, quite some time ago. So when you catch the reference to last week, we're talking about actually about 3 or 4 years ago. Here we go. Lane County historian Curtis Irish last week called my attention to a mule-powered railroad. I can't say it's the only one, but I've never heard of another. If you've ever dared take your eyes off the road while going over Santiam Pass toward Bend, you may have seen it. Rock cribbing supporting a railroad grade going up the side of a geographical feature called Hog Rock. Not Hog Butte. Not Hog Hill. Not Hog gently sloping railroad-friendly mountainside. No. Hog Rock, and a rock it is, not something you would think a railroad man in his right mind would want to run a track across. But Colonel T. Edgington Hogg, the man who arranged it, was not exactly in his right mind. In fact, he built this track in a desperate gamble to save himself from financial ruin. He lost, by the way. Here's the story. In the 1870s and 1880s, Hogg was in the railroad business. Starting out small, he incorporated the Corvallis and Yaquina Bay Railroad Company in 1872. The connection through the Coast Range was completed in 1884. At Yaquina Bay, he ran a steamer, the Yaquina City, which took passengers to other ports from there. This railroad line, by the way, plays a prominent role in the subject of our last podcast, the one about F. Edmund Creffield, the crazy preacher from Corvallis. It actually gets going in part two, when Creffield, his flock, and his would-be assassin all ride that railroad line to Yaquina City, and a showdown ensues. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Hogg didn't plan on staying small. He envisioned a huge project, a railroad line that would go from Chicago through Corvallis and out to the ocean at Newport, which he saw as a more logical trading spot than Portland because it wouldn't require crossing the Columbia River Bar and going miles upriver. Portland swells, as you can imagine, were not pleased by this idea, not least because it made sense on paper. Hogg's route would cut 300 miles off the Chicago to San Francisco run, which was then done by rail and sea. But for the venture to work, Hogg had to get track laid across the Cascades so that it could connect with a terminus in Boise. If that didn't happen, the government wouldn't give him the enormous land grants, the sale of which were to finance much of the action. Well, everything was going swimmingly until the steamship that Hogg had running at the Newport terminus, the SS Yaquina City, suddenly suffered rudder failure. A cable snapped, and it was washed aground at the mouth of the bay. Everyone got off safely, but the waves broke the ship apart. It was grounded, by the way, at the foot of what is now known as Chicken Hill, where the Yaquina Bay Lighthouse is. Of course, the North Jetty wasn't there at the time yet. Obviously, this was a big deal. But it was actually an even bigger deal than it looks, because the steamship was a key part of Hogg's primary source of income. Even without the Chicago traffic, the steamship and Hogg's railroad offered the fastest service to San Francisco from the mid and south Willamette Valley. They'd become a popular line. Hogg scrambled to replace the Yaquina City with insurance money. But meanwhile, without the steamer's income, he didn't have enough money to finish his rail line to the Cascades summit. In desperation, Hogg dropped work on his rail line and had his workers go straight to the summit of the pass and build a track over it. Once this was done, Hogg had a boxcar disassembled and packed into boxes, which were lugged to the pass by mules. On site, this boxcar was reassembled and the mules pulled it over the pass a couple times. The letter of the law having been thus met, Hogg happily announced to the government that he had fulfilled his end of the deal. A railroad line was now running across the summit of the Cascades. He got no pushback from Washington. Everything looked good. Then disaster struck again. While his new ship, the SS Yaquina Bay, was being towed into the harbor by a tugboat, the cable snapped, and the Yaquina Bay was washed onto the shore to lay its bones beside those of its sister ship, the Yaquina City. Two cable failures, in the exact same spot, within a few months of each other, destroying the same man's ship. What are the odds? Few at the time thought it was coincidence. And it's almost certain that the Portland companies threatened by Hogg's Newport scheme had some hand in the double accident. But there's a big difference between almost certain and proven in court. Hogg had no proof. Even if he had had proof, he wouldn't have had enough money to hang on until he could get satisfaction in court. In any case, if it was sabotage, it worked. This time, the loss was not insured. Within months, Hogg's business was in receivership. Shortly thereafter, he left the state a ruined man. But today, more than 100 years later, his railroad grade to nowhere is still there. Well, that's it for today's episode. And if you're listening for the first time and would like some more information about Offbeat Oregon, you can get everything on our central website at offbeatoregon.com, where you'll find links out to the complete catalog of about 205 columns going back to 2008, plus links out to audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and to the Facebook page and Twitter feed. The website's also where you'll find full citations to sources for this story, which for today's episode include a book by William Sullivan, a conversation with Curtis Irish, and a research paper written by Rich Sandler. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. The podcast you're listening to is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Anytime you're coming to Corvallis or just want to chat, drop me a line. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or you can reach me on Twitter @offbeatoregon. And that's it for today. Coming up tomorrow, I'm going to talk about Uncle Joab Powell, one of the very interesting early colorful characters of the state of Oregon, was the original preacher of the state legislature for the very first state legislative session. I will have that story for you bright and early tomorrow around 6 a.m. In the meantime, Happy New Year, and go fill up the rest of the new year with good stuff, will ya? Bye now.